Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. So I would like to acknowledge my co-authors before I begin. Elizabeth Cushman is the past evaluator and current director of the Healthy Start program I'm going to be talking about. Glenn Copeland is the registrar at the Michigan Department of Community Health, and Mark Wilson is a professor of epidemiology at the University of Michigan. I have no relationships to disclose. So I'm going to be talking about a Healthy Start program that is implemented by the Intertribal Council of Michigan. It's part of a larger program that many of you are probably familiar with, but Healthy Start is a national program. It's implemented by HRSA, or it's funded by HRSA, rather. They operate in several locations around the country, and the criteria to qualify to even apply for the money is that your community that you're going to work in has to have an infant mortality rate that's at least 1.5 times greater than the national average. Each community program is specific to the community. The tenets of Healthy Start are that it's a home visiting program and is community driven and very population specific. So I'm going to talk specifically about Majtag Manov method. I apologize if I did not say that correctly. This is the Healthy Start program that the Intertribal Council of Michigan has been running since about 1998. So the American Indian infant mortality rate in Michigan is much higher than the white non-Hispanic rate. These data are combined data from 2006 to 2009 and show the infant mortality rate for American Indians is 9.7, which is much greater than the white non-Hispanic rate of 5.5. And I also want to say that this is probably an underestimation of the American Indian infant mortality rate due to misclassification of American Indians in the birth records. The total project area of the Healthy Start program I'm talking about is 27 counties. It's a really wide geographic area, and I'll show a map on a future slide. But it's really in several different locations. It's unique. Most Healthy Start programs operate in like one city or one zip code, but the Intertribal Council of Michigan project operates at 7 different sites. 5 of the communities in the Upper Peninsula are extremely rural and isolated, and they have harsh winters, and there's only one NICU in the entire UP, so there's very limited access to care. The participants in the Healthy Start program tend to have a really high stress profile. They tend to, as you can see here, be women and families living in higher poverty. They tend to smoke, be exposed to more domestic violence, substance abuse, and several other issues, including discrimination. That being said, there's no sort of like eligibility requirements to participate in this Healthy Start program. There's no income requirement or anything like that. And then finally, the Healthy Start program of Intertribal Council is somewhat unique in that it's based at tribal sites and it's run out of tribal sites, so either tribal health clinics or, in one case, an urban nonprofit. And it's managed by the tribes, and each site has 2 people, a nurse and an outreach worker. And I think half of the nurses and all of the outreach workers are Native women, and so it really has this sort of endorsement by the tribes that comes through with the care. So this is the map. I don't know if you guys are too familiar with Michigan, but the Lower Peninsula is the mitten, and then the Upper Peninsula is that part up there, and it takes about 5 hours to drive east to west across that. And you can see a lot of the sites are up there, and that's just one picture from the Upper Peninsula. It's absolutely gorgeous and quite remote. So this is the first slide. This is what motivated our study. And so these are data from the birth records in Michigan. The blue line it shows infant mortality rate over time between 96 and 2006. And these are not Healthy Start participants, but it is the infant mortality rate of American Indians living in counties where Healthy Start operates, as compared to the red line, which is all American Indians living in Michigan, and then the yellow line, which is white. So you can see that there's the sharp decline of the blue line in the Healthy Start counties. However, this is based on extremely low numbers. I hesitated to show this at all because the numbers are so small. They're not statistically significant. So we couldn't do an analysis of infant mortality rates. However, we thought the picture was telling enough to motivate this study. And so I'm going to talk about the study we did instead. So these are the questions. Instead of looking at infant mortality, we looked at risk factors for infant mortality. And we wanted to know if Healthy Start participants had improved pregnancy and birth outcomes as compared to non-Healthy Start participants living in Michigan. And we also wanted to know if the impact of Healthy Start was different in rural and urban areas and in lower and higher income areas. And this is, if you remember the map, because the areas are so different, we wanted to know if it was truly a consistent effect in all counties or just limited to rural or lower income counties. So So we conducted a retrospective cohort study. We looked at all American Indian births that occurred in Michigan between 1998 and 2008, and we restricted to singleton births. We also restricted to births to American Indian women living in counties where at least 5% of all the American Indian births in those counties were to Healthy Start participants. And this was in some effort to control for the geographic effects that we knew we couldn't control for quantitatively. So our final cohort that we looked at was 4,149 infants, 872 of whom were Healthy Start participants, born to Healthy Start participants. So, as I said, we used the live birth records in Michigan, and we identified Healthy Start participants by linking participant records from the Healthy Start program to the live birth records. And we did this using LinkPlus 2.0. It's a free software from the CDC that you can download. And I can go into more detail about that if you want later. But using LinkPlus, we were able to identify 95.6% of the Healthy Start participants that we had information on through the participant records. And so the final sample size that we looked at, or the final data set that we looked at, was essentially the birth records with another column added for a variable that was Healthy Start participant, yes or no. So therefore, our exposed group was infants born to Healthy Start participants, and then the unexposed were American Indian infants living in the counties, as I described, born to non-Healthy Start participants who are American Indians. And we defined American Indian infant using both the race of the mother and the race of the father, which is somewhat of a departure from the standard way to define race of the infant. So we looked at three outcome variables. We looked at low birth weight, preterm birth, and inadequate prenatal care. These are the potential confounding factors that we considered. We looked at parity, the infant sex, the number of maternal risk factors. We combined this all into one variable using risk factors that are listed in the birth records, just stage, preeclampsia, hypertension, diabetes, HIV, things like that. We also combined tobacco and alcohol use into one variable, and we considered source of payment for delivery as Medicaid, private, or other, and the mother's age and mother's education. So our analysis we did using the chi-score test and independent samples t-tests to look at differences in risk factors between Healthy Start participants and non-participants. We use logistic regressions to calculate the odds ratios and assess confounding using change in estimate criterion. To test our hypotheses about the different counties, because we did not have information in the birth records about income or urbanicity about the women, we didn't have individual level data, and so we took county level data from other sources and then stratified the data by counties, or into two groups based on the county of residence of the mom. We used data from the 2003 rural-urban continuum codes to divide the births into urban, semi-urban, and rural strata, and then we used median household income from the 2000 census data to divide the births into higher income or lower income strata. So our results, the Healthy Start participants tended to be slightly younger. This is significant, but it was the participants were 24.5 years on average compared to 25.1 years. They had a greater number of risk factors. They tended to live in rural counties, and they tended to live in lower income counties. And we did not find any statistically significant differences in any of the other factors. Okay, so this is a figure showing the odds ratios. These are adjusted odds, and this is for low birth weight. So if you look at the bottom, we found in the full sample there was no real difference in birth rate or in birth weight when we compared the participants to non-participants. However, when we stratified, we did start to see some differences. We saw that women living in urban counties, rural counties, and lower income counties had lower odds of having a low birth weight infant compared to non-participants. This is only significant for the lower income counties. And then there's a slightly increased odds for Healthy Start participants. They had higher odds of having a low birth weight baby in the higher income counties and slightly higher in the semi-urban counties. When we look at adjusted odds ratios for preterm birth, we find that in rural and lower income counties, the participants had better odds. They have lower odds of having a preterm birth infant compared to non-participants. However, in the higher income counties, counties with a median household income greater than or equal to $34,000, participants had higher odds of having a preterm birth as compared to non-participants, and this was statistically significant. They also had higher odds in urban counties and slightly higher in semi-urban counties. So finally, looking at prenatal care, we compare participants to non-participants. We saw that participants had improved odds. They had lower odds of having inadequate prenatal care if they lived in rural counties and lower income counties. And we didn't see a difference in any of the other strata. So to summarize our program effects, for low birth weight, we saw that Healthy Start participation was protective for participants living in urban, rural, and lower income counties. And there are higher odds for participants living in higher income counties. For preterm birth, we saw Healthy Start participation was protective for participants living in rural and lower income counties. And Healthy Start participation, participants had increased odds if they lived in urban and higher income counties. And for inadequate prenatal care, Healthy Start participation was protective for participants living in rural and lower income counties. So our study has several limitations. Very importantly, Healthy Start participation was not randomly assigned, and in some cases, women are actually targeted to participate in Healthy Start. So we know that our participants and non-participants lack comparability on several levels, and we tried to control for this as best we could, but we know that we did not do a perfect job. And I think the most important thing I want to point out is the classification of American Indian race. As I mentioned, in the birth records, there's really high rates of misclassification, so American Indians are very often not classified as American Indian in the birth records. And we actually saw that in our Healthy Start participant records, we know that every single one of those infants is an American Indian. Either the mom or the dad is an American Indian. We know that. And 25.6% of those infants were not classified as American Indian in the birth records. And so while we included all of them in our participant file, in our exposed group, we know that we missed out on several infants who would have been included and exposed had they been enrolled in Healthy Start, but we did not capture them in our unexposed group. So this is a huge issue, but is one of the most important differences that we know exists. We didn't include any analysis of the extent of exposure to Healthy Start, and so some women may visit a nurse once or twice, or the nurse or outreach worker may come to her home just once before she has a baby, and then others may have weekly check-ins, they may have several visits, and we didn't include any of that in our analysis. We talked about it, but the records were a little bit messy, and we couldn't do it in a very clean way. And we also know that we have a really weak assessment of healthcare access, and this is probably one of the most important differences that we didn't control for. We tried to use income and urbanicity as sort of proxies to control for the geographic variation, and we know that different counties have extremely different proximity to transportation, to NICUs, to hospitals, to healthcare clinics and pediatricians. And then obviously there are other issues of access that we couldn't control for. And also, we didn't have individual level data for income and urbanicity. It was just one time period. And finally, we controlled for some factors that are specifically targeted by Healthy Start, like smoking and source of payment for delivery. So this might have biased our results because we included them in the model. Thank you. Sorry. Okay, so to conclude, infant mortality rate for the participants is lower than non-participants, but we can't assess this statistically. So we did find that Healthy Start participation is associated with improved outcomes in some counties, and we believe that it's making important contributions towards reducing infant mortality rate for American Indians living in Michigan. These are my acknowledgments. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Although the presentations have concluded, we will open it up for questions. Each of the presenters can, if they would like, they can come up and sit here, or they can stand at the where they are should you address, you have a question. Actually, now that I mention it, please come up here. So that way, it's more of a panel discussion in that way. And we do have a large room, so I will step away from the podium so you can use the podium so that way you can, if you're unable to or unable to project to the back of the room for everyone to hear. Are there any questions? Okay, I will start with you I'll start with you because I saw you had your hand up first before we had everyone move up here, so please.
Thank you. I have a question. I'm not an epi major, hospital administrator. Well, I think what I would say is at this point, there hasn't been any evidence that either one is a definite cause of the other, not from my study and not from other studies. The reality is that either could plausibly cause the other. You could, you know, and probably it happens both ways. But as of now, there isn't any evidence that one factor causes the other more often than the reverse. So it's while it's plausible that feelings of depression could cause, for example, a mother to be less responsible in terms of acquiring food. It's also plausible that lack of resources to acquire enough food can cause depressive symptoms. So at the moment, I don't think there's anything in the literature to suggest that one definitely causes the other and not the other way around.
I said that you had your hand up.
I'm sorry.
So the time frame of the first study. What was the time frame of your study for the
date? 1998, 2007. We did not include that in their study. In the study, we did not control for it. And I believe that was the next factor in the step to include the variation in the medical technologies and medical improvements and quality of care. Yeah.
We don't know whether they induced was self-planned or not. We don't know that. They were just reported as completing second stage of labor and going into induction. Does that answer your question?
So the women didn't know before 35 weeks they were going to plan induction.
Correct.
Okay. And that makes a difference. A lot of them do plan. You know,
right. I think the cesarean was where we had a definite indication whether it was planned or not. And majority of the ones who had planned it had already had a
okay. And so, do you have any indication if they had a induced vaginal an induction that failed when they went to an unplanned C-section because they got in trouble?
No, these were independent categories. So,
okay.
These were vaginal delivery without an induction, vaginal with induction, and then C-section planned or not.
Before I move on, I'm going to use a moderator's privilege because I have a couple of questions as well for you. I may have missed it, so I apologize if I did. Could you tell us a little bit about the study itself? I understand your piece, but the larger study, from which the subset of your sample came from. Because my understanding is it was a national study or something of that effect. And so if you could talk about that first.
It's a national panel of consumer panel survey that CDC conducts every, we're just actually going into the field for infant feeding practices 3. So it looks at, it selected women from the panel. About 5,000 women were pregnant. So we had a prenatal, they were in the third trimester of pregnancy. So that's how they entered the study in that. So it's not necessarily nationally representative, if that's what you're asking, but it is a panel from all over the United States from which these women came.
And how did those mothers get on that? How are they
panel? They had to be pregnant.
Okay.
They had to be pregnant and in the third trimester.
Okay.
Yes.
And then you mentioned also in your inclusion criteria that they had to be healthy at birth. Could you define what healthy at birth means?
Sure. It was basically they weren't hospitalized for more than 2 days.
Okay. And then I have one other. I have another one. I have two others, but I'll only ask one so we can move on. The other one is you mentioned the intervention question. You had one intervention question.
You mean intention?
Intention, excuse me. One intentions question. That's their intention to breastfeed. Is there a reason why there was only one question, or particularly with this population? Breastfeeding and others, that there wouldn't be other questions about intention, and not just intentions, but then the actual performance of. And did you look at between intent? Well, you kind of alluded to, but from intention to.
Sure. Basically, the way on their prenatal survey, all the women were asked how did they plan to feed their baby, and that's the intention question. That's a pretty standard question. Yeah. To assess women's intention pre-delivery.
There's no other question then?
Well, there are lots of questions. There are more than, when you look at the survey itself, it's lots and lots of questions. But that is the question, measuring their intention and then the attitude following
them.
Okay. I'm still confused about this because if a woman at 35 weeks who doesn't know if she's going to be induced or not, why would she have a different feeding intention from those?
Let me actually clarify for you. Basically, women were selected to be in the survey at the last trimester. Okay, they had to be in the last trimester of pregnancy. And so, the majority of them, we wanted to sort of ferret out all the ones who could have been to the preterm delivery or what have you. But women were delivered at 30. So, the intention for men are that's prenatal.
Right.
Okay? And then the following, since we have one, it's related to that. We were able to take it in a paradigm and make it deliver culture and birth or culture. It's not internal, but we're following women from their last trimester.
Well, I think it's a part of personality, but there's a difference in intention between those that were vaginally induced and those were not. Who delivered vaginally?
So, right, the delivery methods are reported on the first questionnaire 4 weeks post delivery. So we are able to look at their intentions pre delivery, and then what happened and the way they delivered. The assessments were.
Right, I understand. But there's a difference between their intent prenatally and.
We're going to go ahead and move on to other individuals can ask questions. If you have additional questions, feel free. The presenters will be around following the Q&A, so you can have a more one-on-one discussion. And this might be a good opportunity. Yes.
American Indians. You mentioned it right at
I do have a question for her as well, so, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I shouldn't put, you know, non-Latino whites. No problem. Thanks.
Okay, so we'll go back to the Healthy Start, the questions that I have. You mentioned, as he was mentioning, you did discuss race. You said that there was, you looked at the father and the mother to determine, but it wasn't generally the stand. That's not the standard practice. Could you tell us what the standard practice is? Excuse me?
The standard is to use the race of the mother.
Only the race of the mother.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good to know. And then the other question that I have is, on there, you said that you combined the tobacco and alcohol into one question. Prior to doing that, I was wondering if you looked at tobacco and alcohol and the severity of tobacco and alcohol separately, how those impacted the mothers and their participation in Healthy Start, as well as their the outcomes. Because it seems to me that there are people who, and you know, in particularly the Native American community, they have high rates, high incidence of alcohol. It's very prevalent. And so I was wondering, so to combining those together, yes, alcohol and smoking generally sometimes do go together, but not necessarily for all of them. So I was wondering if you could discuss, if you did look at them separately, if you pulled them together, and if you didn't look at them separately, if there are any plans to do so.
Tell me if I missed part of your question.
That's fine.
So, yes, we did look at them separately, and I don't remember for sure, but I think there were no differences between participants and non-participants in both smoking and in tobacco use and alcohol use during pregnancy. And the reason we combined them is because they were so closely correlated. I didn't want to include them both in the model, mm-hmm. so separate.
Mm-hmm.
And so we combined them as use both tobacco and alcohol, use only tobacco, use only alcohol, or use neither. So that's mm-hmm. the actual variable that I included in the model.
I'm sorry, can you say that one?
Yeah, that one I guess they had four categories. Okay. So it was both alcohol and tobacco, use only tobacco, use only alcohol, or use neither during pregnancy.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
For the most part, yeah. Okay. I'll chat with you afterwards.
Okay.
For further. Yes. That's actually, yeah, that brings up a good thing. So these were, you got the alcohol and smoking from the birth certificate.
Yes.
Okay, so you didn't actually interview then the individuals for their alcohol or their...
Yeah, all the start nurses do.
Mm-hmm.
That's like part of the Healthy Start program is it's one of the very first assessments mm-hmm. there for those programs mm-hmm. That they would be helpful. But we did not use the Healthy Start participant
okay.
at all. All of the analysis was done with the birth record data, and that was due to...
Okay.
In the participant records, I'm just wanting, we didn't want to, like, so many different people had collected the data over so many different years
mm-hmm.
that we mm-hmm. just used the birth records, and also so we could directly compare the participants and non-participants.
Okay.
So all the analysis was done with birth records again.
Okay, that's helpful. That should, okay. Thank
yeah,
you.
Sorry, I'm sorry, I didn't get that there.
Okay, are there additional questions?
Native, but dyed white.
study using death records, tribal registries, and the cancer registry in Michigan, which we haven't sent you. It's been published. Jenna Johnson was the first author, and I don't remember the journal. I think it's 2009. But she did a really great study working directly with a tribe and their registry. And I don't know of other studies that have been done in tribal registries, although you may be aware. I'm not sure. I think people are definitely looking at the tribal registry.
Yeah, the Indian Health Service funded tribal epidemiology centers are increasingly doing those combinations. So the one in the Northwest states, the whole Pacific, Portland Northwest Area Indian Health Board, has got an ongoing program comparing tribal registries with the cancer registries and informing cancer registries where there are misclassifications to improve the calculation of cancer rates. And other state health agency data sets as well.
That's great.
It's being done a lot. It's to my, to the best of my knowledge, not being done a lot with looking at misclassification in risk.
Yeah, no, it's actually, we're thinking really hard about how to do this very carefully, about how to do it, because we found this, you know, initial study, we found such a high rate that we would like to do a certain study. So, yeah, if anyone has ideas, we'd like to pursue it. I'm trying to document it, so that people can use just the factors.
Any other questions from the audience? Before, do you have one? Go ahead. This is, I would ask that you please keep your questions germane to the panel to the panel presentations, and if you have a question that's not germane, that you have that discussion separate from the panel member, from the Q&A for the panel. If there are no other additional questions from the audience, okay.
Actually the first study to show that when you normalize for all those sociodemographic variables that the infant mortality rates do equalize, because the major studies that have looked at preterm births have showed that despite equalizing for all of those variables, the infant mortality rates are still much higher in African Americans than whites, non-Latino whites. Thanks.
Don't go too far, I do have a question for you. Hold on a second. I can always ask it after. I can ask it after this. It was about the race. You mentioned. In one of your slides, you mentioned there were slightly lower low birth weight among African Americans, death than whites. It was one of the slides that you showed. Could you speculate as to why you think that there was lower low birth weight in that slide? And I don't know if that was one of the ones that you adjusted. It wasn't. It may have been an adjusted, but that was surprising that it's lower than whites. So if you could talk about that, that'd be great.
Yeah, no, my mentor and I were actually just discussing that. It is an interesting finding that we haven't investigated yet that does deserve further investigation. It does seem preliminarily that from our study that non-low birth weight African-American infants have higher rates of sudden infant death syndrome and accidental death, accidental associated death, and not or than low birth weight infants. But again, we didn't specifically investigate that, so it's a good question.
Thank you. It's good to know that you guys actually had recognized that as well. Are there any additional questions? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and conclude the session. But before we do, please give the presenters a round of applause. Thank you very much.